Oh, hello, everyone, again. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, Part 2. And sorry, we lost reception somehow. And it's never happened before when I've been doing this, but now I'm glad everyone could call in again. So, yeah, we can go ahead and resume with what we were talking about with Sean White and what the dilemma that he was in with deciding whether to do both the slope style and the half pike, or do you do both events? And I think this applies to every sport. Would you advise them to try to just to do the one half pike if you were talking with him, or how would you sort that through? And then also just the issue of how to handle the pressure of all the media and all. Pam, I know you said you knew Sean White a little bit.
Yeah.
Weigh in on that first.
For him, the biggest, the pressure of the media, he can usually turn off because he goes into those events so confident. And this time he wasn't as confident, I think, because he's trying to pull off the double. And he's never in the half pipe. Once you made the decision to pull out of the slope style, then the pressure was on him. He is, not liked by a lot of other snowboarders, so there's that pressure that goes on him also.
Because of the fame and money he's making?
Yeah, and he's such a competitive guy that most snowboarders are friends with each other, and the competitors speak with each other, are friends with each other, then compete against each other, and then go back to being friends.
Yeah.
He has a philosophy that he can't be friends with competitors.
Uh-huh.
So he's, the lone wolf always, and that puts added pressure on him also. And in the past, he's always been able to pull it out. He's never, ever gone into an event in his last run being behind, so he's never had to do that last run to win. He's always been able to do his last run as kind of just a show-off and totally relaxed because he's already won before he does his second run. His score has put him ahead of everybody else. So this was a first time for him of going into the very last run, not being in winning position. So that would be something, obviously, working with an athlete of, okay, how, what do you have for plan B if something happens and you're not where you think you're going to be? And my guess is he has never really thought through that scenario. So as a sports psychologist working with somebody, it's you got to try to cover all bases, all the what-ifs before you go into an event so that they will have in their mind what they need to do and how to kind of relax and go with it. And the other part that was really difficult, actually, for all the snowboarders had the same thing, is the snow was softer than normal. So they, again, another in their back pocket, okay, if it's soft and I can't get up to the, get up the side of the pipe as high as I want to go, what trick am I going to do instead of the trick I had planned? And that was the same for everybody, but lots of people, some people were complaining louder than other people about that part of it, the conditions. And then, it's understanding that there's what I can control and what I can't control in an event.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You hit so many great points, Pam. I think that, I guess those things, I mean, them a little bit, and I've heard those, understand those things too from what I've read and from people I've talked to that, he's so much into the business part of things, and so and so separate from the other athletes that there's probably animosity that he feels very alone, and there's not that camaraderie there.
That puts pressure on you right there too, without that camaraderie, because especially in, some sports everybody's kind of loners, but the snowboarders, just because they compete in the same little circle all the time, they all know each other and are good friends mostly.
Yeah, right. And he was always known as the tomato head with the long red hair. And
yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's cut his hair short, kind of like the businessman.
Yep.
He's not he doesn't look like the carefree teenager, the image that we used to have of him.
Mm-hmm.
That we have of a lot of athletes. Yeah, well, that's great. Really great insights, Pam. Yeah, other people want to weigh in on your thoughts on Shaun White and what you would do or what he must have been going through?
This is Amy. I think the factor of the condition of the snow played a really important role. I think that he had to try harder because he knew the conditions were not good, and I think that that, you know, just innately put a lot of extra pressure on him.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
I mean, that's a tough position to be in, especially with all the expectations. And maybe it would have been different. Maybe he wouldn't have to try as hard if the conditions were normal, but they were anything but normal.
Yeah, but the same is said for all the people. It opened the door for way more people by
right.
having adverse conditions where, you know, the two Japanese guys blew it up because maybe it's they liked the conditions better or, you know, it was more suited to their abilities, which, you know, you can't control what the conditions are going to be in the pipe, so you have to be ready for soft snow or hard snow kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it opened it up, but it definitely put more pressure on him because he does better in the hard conditions.
So, right.
Right. It neutralizes everybody, which puts more pressure on him.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah.
A lot of people are training in Colorado for this. They were talking about how it's all the international athletes from other countries have been coming to Colorado to train for the slopestyle and half pike, and so it's all either used to harder snow there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
more snow.
What?
More snow,
yeah.
Which then they could make to be harder snow when they have enough snow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As opposed to no snow at all here in California.
Yeah.
Where they all left California.
Yeah.
So that's a really good point. And you'd think, after the first run, well, they had mentioned that, I think Shaun White came in with the highest scores or some of the highest scores for the qualifiers, but then when things suddenly go wrong in the finals there in the first run, he fell or, you know, kind of messed up. It really, then you start to question your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you had a chance to, talk to, if you were talking to Shaun White about, both the decision to, you know, should you do both the slope style and the half pike or only the half pike, and then that question and also what to say to him after he sort of messed up on the first run of the final and what to say before the next run. I'd love to hear from all of you what you would say to Shaun White or what ideas you would have. You guys, anyone can jump in.
Well, getting to your notion of present focus,
Michelle?
For Shaun White. That's Michelle. For his second run, I think that should have been the emphasis for him and just getting himself right here, right now, visualizing that perfect run, and he has to leave that first run behind him. Once he starts thinking about that and obsessing about that, it's really hard for him to focus, you know, get that present focus to do the job he needs to do.
Yeah, that's true. So if he could have a routine of some sort, but you could rehearse that ahead of time with Shaun White, and this is good for any of your athletes to have some sort of routine of, you know, practice if there was a mistake. What are you going to do to to get rid of that mistake out of your mind quickly. Maybe whether it's just kind of wringing your hands, or the pitcher I've worked with taking a stone from the mound and throwing it behind you, or just saying that's behind me now, or saying a few words to yourself, let it go. Next run, just this run, just this trick, that kind of thing. It would be really helpful, I think. Like as you say, it just that's great, Michelle. Yeah, just staying in the present and being able to. It's tough when so much is riding on it, but just be able to say, this is kind of almost say, okay, new run, fresh run, fresh mindset. So that each time he does goes down the hill, it's like a brand new adventure. Yeah. Anyone else? What else? Other thoughts do you guys have?
You think breathing would have been a good thing to do at that point in time? I can imagine his arousal level may have gone higher than normal, possibly.
Yeah.
To slow down and even be able to bring in a visualization or power words, you have to be in a relaxed state, like you were saying, to even absorb those images. And if your mind is going quick, it's kind of hard to it's almost like you're forcing it in there if you're not in an open state of mind to bring in those images. And I can only imagine when you're racing or, you have this Olympic thing once every 4 years, you have to have the ability to slow down and be in control of your arousal level.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, Dave. The simplest, we often forget about the simplest things to do, which is just breathing. And you can use your breathing, Sean could use it as a way to let go of the last run. So as you breathe out, that's a good time to just telling to breathe out that last run, breathe out the mistakes. And then with your next breath, breathe in, the a nice smooth run, see how you'd like it to go. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling more relaxed already just listening to you, Dave.
I have to do that a lot. When I do compete golfing, it's, really just slowing down, it's very helpful to just breathe deep through the belly, and it slows your mind down, which is, it's kind of funny. Like, I realize I can't consciously tell myself, slow down or calm down. It's the breath is a great way to kind of get there, and then you can kind of see things the way you want to, and that's a huge help.
Yeah, and I think another technique is if you can combine some sort of power words with your breathing. So every time you breathe in, say a phrase to yourself, like, I'm breathing in strength. And then as you breathe out, just say, I'm breathing out, letting go, or breathe out, let go of the tension. And then next breath, I'm breathing in a great run, breathing in a great performance, or breathing in confidence, and then just breathing out the stress or letting go. So that you use your breath to, if you're breathing in and then you're saying something to yourself that's good, then it can gives your mind lots of things to do so that you're not focusing on the mistake and the pressure.
Yeah.
So that's really
good. That's great.
Yeah. And so that's something we can all use all the time. What about that idea of the let's say if you were working with Sean and he was trying to decide, gosh, should I do both the slope style and the half pike, or should I only go for the half pike? What kind of, how would you, each of you, how would you talk with him about making that, helping him make that decision? What do you think? Anybody?
I think I would, it's Amy. I think I would talk to him about being very careful in the planning as far as what is expected with each event that he's doing? You know, when do you practice, and to really be organized and plan out on a calendar, you know, how do you see this working? If you have to train for this event on this day, when are you going to do this? And just kind of go through it in a methodical way to see, is this something that can be done? You know, and to be really organized about what's going to happen each and every day, you know, and do you have recovery time to go through?
Yeah, that's great. You could actually, you know, if you probably had a time, a day or two to decide that, and you could, you know, if you were working with him, you could, you know, go through a visualization. That sometimes one type of visualization is, you know, one where you actually help someone make a decision. So they, you know, have them visualize, okay, Sean, let's visualize going through where you're doing the two sports. Let's say you've decided to do both sports, the slope style. You're doing that, and then you're going into the half pike, and see what that's like, and feel that, and experience that in your mind, and, you know, go through fully, you know, feel all the feelings you would have, and have them experience that, and then do a second visualization where you just let go. Let's say now let's do a second scenario where you decide to, you know, just let go of the slope style, and we're only focusing on the half pike, and visualize that. How does that feel, and how do you see yourself performing? And oftentimes when somebody's visualizing those things, you know, feelings come up, and, you know, the deeper inner feelings about what, you know, what the right thing to do is, or, you know, not, you know, they realize other things that they wouldn't, if you're, you know, if you're just logically trying to make a decision, which I'm sure that's mainly what he was doing with him and his coaches, you know, your left brain, that logical, analytical, critical side is doing all the work and saying, you know, weighing the pros and cons and kind of, you know, looking at being cautious and all of that. But then the right brain is that whole other side of your brain that's more creative and sees the big picture and is open to new ideas. So it can get an athlete in the visualization where they're visualizing those two different scenarios, then they see, oh, okay, here's something else I hadn't thought of, or, you know, here's another feeling that came in, and they might see themselves, you know, if they're doing the slope style, they might mess up on the first event because they're so, you know, overwhelmed by having to do two things, or you know, just the other things might, usually the right brain, when you're deeply relaxed, kind of see the big picture, and more elements come into your mind. You know, if you know what I mean. So, yeah. And then and also you can do a visualization where you could have, you know, imagine doing decision number one to do both sports. That's on your left side, and imagine that as a like an animal or something that's or a person that you can talk to, and then you sort of you can create an image out of that. That choice or that decision, and you know have them talk to that part and see what that feels like, and then put on the right hand side. Imagine you've got, you know, decision number two, like to do only the half pipe, and then say, ask that part of you, you know, make that part into an animal. Let's say another animal, like a bird or a wise old man, and ask that part of you what that feels like and what that part needs. So that's another kind of visualization you could do where you kind of divide your choices onto turn it into an image or something that you could actually talk to. So that way it helps you to kind of put it in a different perspective and be able to hear that inner voice inside that can help you make those decisions better.
Did you say visualize a wise old man? You broke up when I couldn't hear that part.
Oh yeah, I was just saying anything. Yeah, you could have them take yeah, that when that decision, let's say, to just do the half pike and then turn it into a image of some sort. Yeah, it could be a wise old man, a wizard, a sort of a something that you consult with, or it could be a you know, your favorite animal, maybe an owl or something we see as wise too. and ask that animal, you know, how, what do you need right now? What are you feeling? What's the best thing to do? And then let the owl talk to you. And basically, it's your own inner voice, your own inner thought talking to you.
Not
that, but it's a way to kind of make it, put it into a different perspective so that your mind can see, you know, the bigger picture and maybe see more aspects of what you're, of the choice and what you need to do. So, Gio, are you still there too? I don't know if Gio.
Who? Yeah, I'm still here, yeah.
Oh, good. I just want to say thank you so much for calling me right there when we lost, I lost the connection.
No, no problem at all.
On the phone, I really appreciate it so that because I couldn't hear anyone to know if you were on the line. And so that was cool.
Oh.
And thank you for communicating with everyone to call back in. So that worked great. Yeah, so Gio, what do you think about the Shaun White situation and what you would do?
Yeah, I think, firstly, I mean, again, I don't have a lot of experience in terms of practical coaching, but I think one of the things that I would work on with any athlete is if there's any disturbances, whether it be mental or something from the outside. I know in the Olympics, I think some of the gondolas were not working and they moved times for the races. And the same thing in golf. You know, you can be in the middle of your pre-shot routine, something distracts you from the crowd or you know, another golfer. You've got to have the discipline to start again and go through your routine exactly the same way as you would do and not let those experiences affect you and rush and change your routine in any way. So I think that's what I would definitely try to work on. I don't know whether that's right or not. I don't know.
What's that?
I said whether that's the right, you know, idea, I don't know. But that, from my own experiences, I think that would be something to definitely bring up.
Yeah, have the discipline to just, go through, basically go back to basics, I think. you know, when you're, when we're really stressed or there's things not going right, you know, sometimes the mind gets confused about what to do. And if you can go back to what you know, go back to the, your fundamentals, the things that you know, the skills that you do well, you know, practice those.
Even in the mental preparation, you know, which you could work on with your guys before going in, you know, that mental preparation that they do before they actually let go to bring themselves into the present and be ready so that they can let go and perform, I think, you know, that's one of the things that you don't see, a lot of people can't see from the outside, spectators, people that watch these guys perform in those pressure situations, they don't see that those steps that they have to take to be ready to actually reach those potentials.
Yeah, exactly. So if you can practice those ahead of time, and like Pam, you were saying, to practice the different scenarios, some athletes, a lot of times, they think, well, I don't want to think about a mistake, or I don't want to imagine making a mistake that'll make me actually make that mistake. But you know, chances are that you know things happen that can go wrong, and we want to, you know, if you can have your athlete be prepared for that and say, okay, let's go through all the different things that could go wrong, make a list of them, and then let's say have a plan for getting through each one successfully, and so you visualize yourself like on the snow with the Pam, you're saying with the soft snow, visualize that. What tricks are you going to do? How can you get through that? How much pressure do you need to put on the snow? And then let's say if it's hard snow, what would you do? Just visualize yourself being out in front, visualize yourself being behind, you know, not doing as well on the first run and having to catch up on the second run. Yeah, all those different things, like you say, if you can visualize them ahead of time, that's going to put you in a better position than athletes who have not visualized that, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. I think, and, you know, sometimes I think it helps, too, when you're in a pressure situation, just a humor or fun, you know, if you have somebody that you can joke around with, and it's hard to do when you're, you know, all that pressure is on. But it, like Pam, you were saying, in this situation, Sean didn't have a lot of friends, you know, when you're sitting at the top of the hill waiting for your run, you know, there's that ready or the start room up at the top, and if there's other athletes in there, you know, and if you're friends with them, you can joke around or, you know, encourage each other and get some support. You know, that's really nice to do that. When I was talking with my skeleton athletes, Melissa, she was saying that at the start room at the top, I asked her, what's that like? And she said that, you know, sometimes it's, you know, people talking to each other, they're looking, checking each other out, seeing what they're doing to get ready, and, you know, and sometimes, yeah, if you have somebody there, you know, you know, you're talking with them and kind of joking, and that really helps. Sometimes it's just stone-dead silence. It's like nothing, you know, absolutely nobody's saying anything to anybody, and it's really, it's more, you know, that's a lot more pressure, or just it's awkward and difficult when there's nobody's talking to anybody. And in this situation with Sean White not being friends with the other snowboarders, he probably didn't have a lot of support, so he didn't have people to talk to there. So, but depending on your sport, of course, all different sports are in different situations, and you can, in most sports, you've got, you know, an athlete has time in between, you know, with golf, like Dave, you know, you've got time in between to chat with people and,
mm-hmm.
Right? Did you find that that's helpful, the humor and the fun part to have a
laughter? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that really helps a lot because I think it's been said that actually when you're out in the golf course, you're out there for 4 hours, but the time that you're actually hitting a shot is about a minute if you add up. So it's you know, the rest of the time you're kind of just out there and you're trying to stay present, or you could get some good laughs in. And so many people do it so many different ways, but it's, you know, you can't just sit there and think about the shot at hand all the time. I think you'd be exhausted at the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you think about it, for 4 hours you're out there and you're only hitting for 1 minute. All the rest of the time is preparing for the next shot, or thinking about the last shot.
Yeah.
beating yourself up for how you didn't do well in the last shot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know if any of you got to watch Jamie Anderson, you know, do the slopestyle. Skiing, you know, she won the Olympic gold medal in the women's slopestyle snowboarding. And, you know, right at the beginning, I think that was Sunday night, and they showed it on TV, and gosh, she was just the opposite of what was happening with Sean White, you know, just all smiles, and looked at her at the top, and she's just, you know, kind of really smooth. Of course, she's in a much better position because she was the favorite, and she was doing really well, and she just kind of was up there, and then right at the top of the hill, she kind of goes, whoo! Like, woo, here I go. it's this little noise, almost like she was singing at the top of the hill. And, you know, it was just like a fun little sound that she made. Like, you know, just like a little kid would go, oh, here we go, down the hill. And if you could get, you know, that's one technique. If you could use something like that, you know, have your athletes, you know, have that kind of childlike what sense of wonder and fun, and you know, go back to, like, when these snowboarders started, it was all about fun and just you know, just having fun on the snow.
Yeah, I saw somebody else at the Olympics, and I can't remember who it was, but they were they had headphones on and they were dancing. It looked like they were having a ball, like pretty, like close to the time that they got ready to do whatever they were doing. And it brought me back to when I was in college, and me and one of the guys on the team, we would just put on, like, hip-hop music because it just reminded us of going out. It got us in a great mindset. And by the time we went out there, we were so carefree and having fun. We were just in a fun state of mind. And it kind of brought me back watching this Olympian just get out there. And she had her headphones on, and she was just dancing. And they actually had the camera on her as she was dancing. That was cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something you can do with athletes if you feel like they're just really stressing out about the results and the pressure be able to say, okay, well, you know, you might take them back, say, for a moment. Let's go back to, you know, when you first started your sport and stuff, you know, can you just imagine that right now? You know, you're just falling in love with your doing your activity and your sport, and just get into that state of mind that you know, there's no expectations, no results, just trying it out, having fun. You can get people into that state of mind and ask them, you know, what drew you to your sport, what attracted to your sport initially, and have them, you know, tell you all the things that attracted you. Then you can you can be writing those down as they're telling you, and then send it to them in an email, or have them write them down as a homework assignment too. All the things that attracted them to the sport, and what they like about their sport, and what's fun about it, to get the fun factor back in there. And then another thing you can do is just have them, you know, say, everybody's got a sense of humor somewhere in there. Sometimes it just gets muted a bit. So if you can have them, you know, have two or three funny things to think about that are ready in their mind. So if something happens, they have a kind of a comic relief, so to speak. Have them go to YouTube and watch, you know, just type in funny videos or funny sports videos or something. If you type in fat people at Walmart, there's hilarious videos on there. Yeah, I've never seen so many butt cracks in my life. Yeah, that has nothing to do with sports, but that sometimes it's nice to just take your mind off of it for a few minutes and think of something hilarious. they're all bent over, you know, looking at something. it's really funny. or thinking of a funny movie or something funny that they said, and then write that down maybe on their hand or on their little piece of paper, and take it with them so that they, you know, when you're in that moment where you need some comic relief, you can think, okay, fat people at Walmart, I'm thinking of that now. it makes you laugh and makes you realize, hey, this sport, what I'm doing right now is not the end of the world here, and there's other things that I can kind of just think about. So, so that was Sean. Well, anybody have any other? Did anyone else join us? I heard some other dings. I don't know if there was somebody.
That was me. I got disconnected and called back.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you are talking about all the possible outcomes and as you're preparing for their event and looking at, you know, the unforeseeables and trying to just plan for those, and then you can create, are you thinking you would create, say you had a list of 10 things that the athlete has come up with that, you know, are worst case scenarios, would you be doing a custom visualization for each one of those, or would you just, because I wouldn't want to put too much energy into it, but just because it's on the negative side of things, but I understand the reason behind it, or would you just sort of come up with an action plan together, or would you do a visualization for each one of those things?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's Michelle?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, And thanks. You must be, gosh, 1 or 2 in the morning there where you are, is it?
Yeah.
You've got such dedication to stay up so late. Everyone, give Michelle some applause.
Yeah.
Yeah, over in Indonesia, yeah, 2 in the morning, boy.
That's why I'm not on every call.
Yeah, oh, gosh. But I'd say, yeah, it's, you know, if they've got 10 things that they're looking at for things that could go wrong, I'd say, yeah, just briefly, let's go through, before doing a visualization, say, okay, here's the 10 things, let's go through each one and do a plan of what you would do to handle that situation, you know, just write, so they have it written down at least, okay, if it's, you know, raining, bad weather, here's what I would do, and or also here's what I could say to myself, like, you know, with things that you can't control, like weather, you can always say to yourself, I perform well under any conditions, kind of thing is a really good, you know, sort of statement, power words. Or you could say, I love the rain. Rain is my friend. my friend. Or you can say, you know, everyone's competing under the same conditions. We're all here. So those kind of things are really good, and they're just good statements to say to yourself anyway. Same conditions, and then you can I'd say, pick one or two things that are the most worrisome or most problematic, and just do a visualization with those things. Let's say they're worried about a particular competitor showing up, or if somebody's doing better than they are, or let's say it's they're worried about if the score is really close. You know, that's a time when people really tighten up. If it scores really close in something, and then they are and they're 1 point behind, and that's a likely scenario that happens all the time when people tighten up. Just like with Sean White, and he saw this the other guy, you know, the competitor perform better than he did, or you know, at his best. You know, visualize that, and then say, you know, how can you rise to the occasion? And say to yourself, I love pressure. You know, pressure is where I excel. Those kind of things, and see yourself kind of getting excited. You know, do a visualization where that situation happens. The pressure, the score is close, and that they can get excited. That okay, this is my chance to shine here. Maybe there was another, and you can ask them, maybe was there another time in the past where the score was really close and you really excelled? So let's go to that time when you were successful, and then see that happening again. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, but like you say, you don't want to do, you know, like 10, if they had 10 things, I wouldn't do 10 visualizations with all the things
right.
that go wrong, because that's maybe too many, but just pick
yeah.
out the main things.
And then would you give them that piece of paper that they could hold on to?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, so that they know that, okay, so it's just kind of like if-then kind of situation. If A, then I'll do B. You know, if this happens, then I'll do, you know, go to the next scenario. So they kind of know that. Or there might be 2 or 3 options, too. They might come up with other things. If it's, like if in this case with Sean White or somebody, if the snow is soft, then I could do my double alley-oop backside rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one, the one technical I know, right? Now we're all going to practice our double alley-oop backside rodeos, right? you know, if they might think of 2 or 3 things that they need would consider doing, you know, they have to evaluate it depending on the situation. The snow might be a little soft, or it might be really soft, or it might be really slushy.
This is one thing they were predicting for Sochi anyway, and I wonder how many of these athletes did train in softer conditions to prepare for it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, that the guy that won, the iPod, they call him, now he's going to be famous, for, especially because he's got the name iPod. I don't know if they, but I would think that the athletes that actually did train in the softer snow would be more prepared. So that's the kind of thing.
Well, that's a really hard thing to do, because most of the time they just make the pipe super hard. So, you know, by adding the salt to the snow. So it's really hard to go find a half pipe soft.
Yeah.
To train in. They knew it was going to happen, but they were hoping that, you know, they could make the conditions better, because there's nowhere really to practice in the softer conditions, and that, you know, except for out of a pipe.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's true. What about, another athlete that was there that didn't do as well as expected was Bodie Miller in the alpine, in the downhill. And he was, expected to do really well. He had the fastest times in his training runs of any of the athletes there. But yet when it came to the actual finals, then he was really fast at the top, I guess, you know, trying to really over, you know, get as much out of it as he could. But then he said he made a couple mistakes later. What are your thoughts about that, and what he might have done wrong, or what you would say to him beforehand?
Yeah, and again, his to me, it was, you know, condition related. The light changed, so it was flatter light, so he couldn't see as well on his run, and the snow conditions changed. So that's just mentally being prepared for whatever comes your way. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes when we're nervous, definitely those things changed. Yeah, you said it was kind of a flat light. Which makes it harder to see the snow, and when you're going 85 miles an hour or whatever, 90, it's just crazy. Every little move makes such a difference. And
he clipped a couple gates too, which got him at the end.
And so oftentimes you see, so many times it's when you make one mistake, then, you know, another, then it's more likely that they'll make another mistake after that, and it kind of messes with your confidence. So that's a good thing to be able to practice with athletes, is making, if you do make a mistake, to be able to recover within the event, because you're having to do that, you know, with the downhill like that. If he slips a little bit, or like you say, clips a gate, to still be able to not say, okay, it's all over now, but to say, okay, just keep going. I can recover from this, or other athletes are making mistakes too. No big deal. To be able to recover within the, not only afterward, but within the run itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you say...
And it's coming at you so fast.
Yeah. You have to really think fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important, too, to when you're doing the visualization with athletes to... I think you can... rehearse it at different speeds. You might want to rehearse, like skiing at, of course you want to rehearse it at the speed that they'll be doing, so they're imagining themselves actually going down 85 miles an hour. But then for one visualization, you might have them slow it down, just do, you know, like these, it's so neat that when we watch on TV now, we can see the super slow-mo, they slow down the video so much more than they used to. So you could do that in your mind, too. See a super slow-mo visualization. and super slow motion, so you're seeing all the different moves. I did that with my skeleton athlete, and she had, you know, there's like about 14, 15 curves on each of the runs for the luge run and the skeleton run. And so we'd go through, you know, she'd been practicing at, you know, say like the Whistler venue in Whistler in Canada, and so, which is the fastest run in the world for the skeleton, 90 miles an hour, and she knew all the curves, so we'd go through each one, and she'd say, okay, curve one is, you know, I need to do this, you know, think about the entrance and get up to the top, steer through the curve, and then you really get pushed out of the exit, so we go through each curve like that and slow it down, and so that she could kind of analyze and see all the details of each curve. And she said she'd never done that before, actually slowed it down in her mind so she could see all the details of each curve. And then once she did that, it's kind of like playing the piano. You know, you practice slowly, and you practice the right hand, and then you practice the left hand learning the piano, and then you put them both together, and then you bring it up to speed. And the same way with athletes, if they're learning a new skill, or if they're each time, like with the skeleton, each time you go to a new venue, a new place, you've got to learn that particular track, and so they're having to. Of course, on the skeleton, there's, you know, if it's 90 miles an hour or nothing, you can't slow it down when you're actually doing the skeleton. So, but still, they can look at it, and they can look at the replays, and then go back and analyze it in their minds slower, and then speed it up, so that then you sort of, once you've done that, your brain has the ability to, you know, put it all together. So, yeah, in the same way, you know, Bodie Miller could do that, kind of visualize each turn and you know, be able to slow it down and then speed it up and then finally see it in the right, you know, it all coming together. Yeah. Do you guys have other questions and other comments about the Olympics or just anything in general you're doing?
I really liked what you said about visualizing, like with Sean White, visualizing the two possible scenarios with the slopestyle and the half pipe and helping him to reach decision that way. I thought that was really quite clever. And then to take it even one step further, once he's made the decision as his coach, you would be there completely supporting him in that decision, so it would just give him that extra little bit of confidence to know that he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, glad you thought that was helpful. Yeah, to have the two choices and be able to be okay with that and see the. Another thing you can do is, with that visualization, I don't know if I mentioned, see, you know, yeah, choice number one, say doing both of them, and then see yourself doing it and see what the outcome is, or just see in your mind what happens at the end, what are the consequences of making that choice, seeing how it turns out or how it could possibly turn out for you, and then seeing choice number two, say only doing the half pike and seeing yourself doing that, how does that feel, and how are you performing there, and what is the consequences of that, so that people know, because a lot of times there are different consequences that they hadn't thought of, all sorts of different things, maybe he might not have thought of, you know, if you don't do the slope style, you might not have thought of how much pressure that's going to put on him to only do the half pike, and then that pressure kept building and building. Whereas if he'd done this kind of visualization of the two, you know, he might have realized, oh, well, if I do the slope style, you know, at least maybe I could get a medal in that, and then, you know, that would give confidence to go into the half pike. So he had something is better than nothing. I think it gives you more chances. So.
Didn't his decision also to pull out so late of the slopestyle prevent one of the other Americans from actually getting on that spot?
Yeah, I think, yeah, the fact that he didn't
give enough advance warning to the IOC?
Yeah, are you asking or saying?
I think so. I think that that's what happened. The next guy who would have been the next runner-up, he couldn't do it because he wasn't given 48 hours notice.
Yeah. That's as far as I know, that's correct, and that's really sad.
That's totally sad.
Yeah, really. I mean, think of that training all your, you know, for years and years. Yeah, and then make the team or be the alternate. And if he might have been right there, and if he'd gotten the notice, he could have, gotten another medal for us, kind of thing. And I'm sure that didn't help his Sean White standing,
his image,
likability with the other athletes.
No.
Either. So that's something to consider. Yeah, and then something to consider with teammates and all. It's different with the Olympics because you are an Olympic team, and you know we're trying to get as many medals as we can, and represent each country. And it's fortunate that with the slope style that Sage, won the, it did get the gold medal, our American guy, and so it all that worked out. But like you say, what about the other guy that's standing there waiting, biting his nails probably,
mm-hmm.
or biting at the opportunity, jumping at the opportunity to do the event. So that's something that would come out against Sean in terms of down the road here. So there's a lot of things to consider. I'm glad you brought that up, Michelle.
I have one other question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm hoping you can make a comment on this American woman who won the half pipe, Barrington, I think her name is.
Yeah.
And she was really the underdog. And I'm just wondering what you think she might have done to pull that one out of the hat.
Yeah, I think it's great. I don't know her that well, but I think it's really exciting that, the big names like Sean White, Bodie Miller, Shawnee Davis, all these the huge names were expected to win, and, the top athletes didn't perform as expected. It gives other athletes a chance to emerge and new stars to emerge. And she's just a really great athlete. I don't know too much about her background, Pam, do you know her? Do you know much about her? I don't know if Pam's still there, or she might have been left because it's a little bit overtime here. But what are your thoughts about her, Michelle?
Well, I know she barely made the U.S. team, and the Australian woman, she was figured to win, and she had a fantastic run. And yet this woman was able to just nudge her out by 0.25. They say it's the closest, mark that wasn't a tie. And so I'm just thinking that she must have been right in the zone, at that point in time.
Yeah, exactly.
To have it all just happen, Her stunts were fantastic and they were flawless. So she had her head game on.
Yeah, and that would be good to go back and watch that again. The replays, you can go to NBCOlympics.com and watch the replays. If you go to the current thing that's on then, you have to, they want you to pay money, I guess, to be able to watch the programs live that are on that day. But if you wait till the next day, you can see the replays, a lot of the replays of the highlights on NBCOlympics.com there for free, most of the stuff. So that'd be good to go back and watch her run. And then I think, just like you say, she barely made the U.S. team, and that kind of being in that kind of position of not being the underdog and
mm-hmm.
not thinking you're going to get on the team, and then all of a sudden you make it, that kind of success at the last minute can give you such a thrill and such an excitement that you know, you feel like, wow, this is such an opportunity. It can really, I think, you know, propel someone into a great opportunity they had. You know,
it's a really good point, and they wouldn't have the accompanying pressure that these other guys are having.
Exactly, yeah, because nobody expects her to win. Oftentimes those are the people that they feel more free to perform because they can just do their thing without everyone saying, are you going to get the gold medal? And also I think that it's good to, most of the athletes like that are not bragging about themselves like the top athletes do. Or if they are, if they have a Richard Sherman moment like we were talking about on our last call, Gio, we were saying, yeah, that was great. Gio, you've had Richard Sherman moments. You know, that was the guy that... did all the talk, the trash talking on that playoffs for the football. If you followed that, and it was all over the news. A lot of athletes are bragging about themselves or ahead of time saying, "I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that." And I think, you know, that's one area where you can. It's best to advise if you're going to advise your athletes. It's better not. To, you know, they can make their own predictions inside their head, but it's better not to to announce that you're going to get the gold medal or predict that you're going to do such and such any specific things, because then you're held to that, and that if you do something less than what you say, then you're considered a failure in the eyes of the public. So it's much better to just say, they'll always ask you, the media and other people, well, how are you going to do? What do you think you're going to do? Can you beat so-and-so? And it's, I think, much better to advise them to say, I'm running my own race. I'm doing the best. I'll do the best I can, and we'll see what happens. You know, and be humble and be gracious and not. I think, you know, if you go to NBCOlympics.com and at the top you can click on all the different sports. You can click on snowboarding, for example, and find Jamie Anderson's her interviews before and afterwards. She's I think that's a great example of someone that's so gracious. I mean, she's beautiful and she has every reason to brag. She got the gold medal and she did everything just right, but yet she just seems like such a genuine person and isn't just happy that her family's there, and that's a really nice attitude to, you know, a good role model for other athletes to follow, I think. Happy for the opportunity, as opposed to saying I'm going to do do such and such. I'm going to place here. I'm going to do this. Get this kind of medal, because what that does is puts a tremendous amount of pressure on you to do that, and it gets you out of. And then it gets you more into the results, thinking about the results than actually the execution, which you. Need to the process of what you need to do to get there. So that's one of the biggest things that I think athletes in the Olympics and athletes at a high level need to focus on. We can help them with as performing edge coaches is to just think about the what you have to do right now. And everybody's asking you, you know, well, you're expected to do this, or we think you're going to do. Have this kind of result, but if you can ask them to just stay in the moment and say, "Well, I'm just focused on doing my best," and just thinking about all the mental strategies that we're working on here, staying focused, staying confident, let the results take care of themselves. And the results will come so much more easily that way, just like they did for, Farrington, like you say, Michelle. I'm glad you brought that up because she's a great example, I think, of somebody just kind of coming out of nowhere and then getting the gold medal.
Did you see her run?
Yeah, it was great, yeah.
Right.
It was great, yeah, fantastic. And it's so neat to see someone really excited afterward and jumping around and, happy and that kind of thing, I think the underdog is the person that's oftentimes they're the ones that can do the best in sports, and it's but it's the people that have already performed well in the past. Oftentimes, you'll get them as clients because, you know, I see hear so much of the time a parent will call and say, you know, my son has done so well in, you know, say, or my daughter, she's done so well at volleyball, and she's had some great games, and there's all these expectations on her, but now she just can't seem to, you know, when the pressure's on, she can't seem to perform because, you know, all this pressure is there. And that's good business for us, actually. So that's a really common theme where somebody's had a really good result, and then, like kids, and then their parents expect them, and the coaches expect them to keep repeating that, and they just can't be as consistent as people want them to be. And it's because they're thinking in their head, well, I've got to be as good as I was. I got to be good every day. I got to be as good as I was on that one day. But it's a process. I think we need to go through of people just believing in themselves and realizing that every day is not going to be a gold medal day. but every day you can put in your best effort, right? So great. Well, let's see. I guess we're about hour and a half. We're about out of time. But do we? You have other questions? These are great questions. Anyone else have anything else to questions or comments or something that was helpful today?
I think with the half pipe, the issue around that was there was also a risk factor beyond the soft snow in the flat area between that, and so I think a lot of athletes get themselves into this state where they're talking about it and obsessing about it, and then it takes on a life of its own. And so if you're working with athletes like that, they need to just kind of stay away from that dialogue that's occurring out there on the hill.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah. Because they're thinking about the snow, the conditions. Like you said, the flat spot at the bottom, you mean?
Yeah, and it was just like, you know, it's just really soft, but the actual vertical of the pipe itself, the angles were slightly off.
Yeah.
Creating a dangerous situation. And I worked on the women's speed track at the Vancouver Olympics 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a tough track and so dangerous. I felt so bad for these women. And some of the best racers in the world, they were crumbling because of, you know, the fear around it. And the more they just talk about it amongst themselves, and they can just, it just takes on a life of its own, you know. Before you know, you've got these panicked athletes. It's just awful to watch.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the case with many. Well, that's really cool that you got to work on the ski track actually for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working on smoothing it out or deciding what the course would be?
No, we were just in charge of icing it up. I was a weasel worker. I don't know if you've heard of the weasel workers, but they travel all around the world to all the World Cup races, and our job is essentially to make the course as flat and fast as possible, flat in terms of surface smoothness, and make it safe for the athletes and get rid of the berms. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool. We lost a lot of people, though. It was dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're out there at 2 in the morning with headlamps on and, you know, going 80 kilometers an hour trying to get berms off the gates and so on. It's fun.
Yeah, and it's always changing, right? You got to be, it's like constant maintenance out there.
And then if you get warm temperatures, it messes with the snow. And Sochi is renowned for that because it's in the south. They don't get the colder temperatures like you would in Colorado where you get nice, dry snow that will set up well. There it just doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And so it just, like you say, when you've got not ideal conditions like that, you can just obsess about it, focus on it, and And then it's kind of like a disease. Yeah, if a lot
yeah.
of people are talking about it, it's contagious. And people are thinking, oh, Jesus, this is really bad, or we're not going to
mm-hmm.
do well here. Or it's going to make other skiers do better, that kind of thing. And so, like you say, I think, and that's been borne out, that kind of idea with other, you know, in other sports. I was just hearing about in football, you know, one team. I forget which they're talking about, one of the Super Bowls where one team, they were just complaining, the coach was complaining about the field and the condition of the grass and the hotel rooms, and complaining about things. So then the athletes follow the coach's lead, and they would start complaining about all this stuff too, and it just creates this kind of negative atmosphere. Whereas the other, and also he had a curfew and didn't allow the athletes to go out at night. They just had to go straight back to their rooms and get focus kind of thing and not have any fun. Whereas the other team, opposing team, I forget which teams it was, the opposing team, the coach was more loose and just said, you guys just have fun, and didn't have all those rules and wasn't complaining about the conditions. And that team ended up winning. Because it's usually the team that's complaining and the athletes that are, complaining about conditions that ends up, as you say, Michelle, just that really cuts into their performance. And then they can
mm-hmm.
use an excuse afterward and say, well, it was because of the conditions that I messed up.
Yeah.
In fact, everybody has to deal with those same conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, sometimes if a course is, if it's a sport is run over a period of time, then maybe everyone is not dealing with the same conditions. Maybe they were icier, it was icier in the morning and then, you know,
mm-hmm.
plushier in the afternoon. So they're saying it's not fair to some athletes. So all that stuff is going on. So what you have to do is, if the athlete is to say, okay, if you're coaching them, say it's, let's separate out those things we can control from those things we can't control,
mm-hmm.
and make a list of both and write them down, and then think, okay, you can't control the snow, you can't control the, you know, where the event is, you can't control the, you know, what time you're going to be going or whether they delay the event or anything, but what you can control is, your reaction to it, how relaxed you are, and if you have extra time, what are you going to do with that time? Let's use it to visualize. And if you have a whole library of visualizations you've created for that person, then they can be going through those on their iPod, listening to them while they're preparing, and to calm their mind down. And that's that's a good way to, like Michelle, instead of talking to all the athletes, if you've got earphones in and you're listening to something, number one, you probably won't be listening to the other athletes complaining. And number two, they won't be talking to you because they know, she's got her headphone on, she's got her iPhone on, she's not available to talk to. So it's a way to kind of shield yourself from all the negativity out there and just
mm-hmm.
listening to the visualizations or music, that helps you too. So, great. Is that Dave that's still there too?
I'm still here, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know, because I know we've gone over time here. Did you have other comments, Dave, or questions?
No, this was great. This was great. I'm just sucking it all in, sucking all this great information in. It's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. This is great. Yeah, and I know you can.
I appreciate it.
I
got a question about level two. How many modules is level two?
8 modules, just like level one.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be 8 weeks. And,
okay.
Start out next Thursday. And then after that, I may make it either Tuesday or Wednesday, just so it's not overlapping with the mentoring calls here.
Okay. So they're separate calls.
Yeah, they're separate calls, and because I'll be doing it first this time, on level one or level two here, because I'll be doing it for the first time. Yeah, there'll be live calls so that we can interact too.
Awesome.
Yeah, that'll be great, yeah. And if if you have other ideas, anything that you would like included in that level two course,
I really enjoyed the like these case studies today. I think that's great. It's really great because just like you said, whether it's golf or whatever, these are all things that you could use in any area.
Yeah,
it's
and
all
like
the same thing.
With golf, you've probably got the same issue with the condition of the grass, right? The green is always an issue, just like snow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got Bermuda grass down here in Miami, which is completely different. There's a lot of pros that don't have much success chipping out of this stuff. The short game is a lot different. Putting is a lot different. And, you know, same thing, dealing with weather, you know, how you're going to prepare for those situations. It's all the same thing.
Yeah. And you can say to yourself, oh, I don't do well in Bermuda grass.
Right. Or wind. Or, you know, some people, like down here in Florida, in South Florida, it's very windy down here. So when I go back to New York, it's not really that windy. So, you know, whenever it was windy when I was competing, I would always, you know, be back in New York. Without even having these tools, I would say I always do well in the wind because I practiced in it so much, you know. And, you know, just little things, little ways to reframe, I think, are very helpful.
Yeah, exactly. The wind is my friend.
yeah. Although I played in the snow one time, and that was a little bit weird. It got canceled after six holes.
Oh, yeah.
The ball was snowballing to the hole. The ball, when we were putting, the ball was beginning to snowball to the hole. So that was that was interesting. I was laughing, but it was fun. I couldn't feel my hands, so that was something I would have to prepare for again in the future.
Yeah,
I wasn't prepared then.
yeah. Really, golf is more of a fair weather sport.
Yeah, most times. Yeah.
When things are
not snow, that's for sure.
Yeah. But there's all conditions there, and so yeah, it's same kind of thing. So yeah, well, this is great discussion with all of you, I'm excited. Thanks, Michelle, for staying on so long here. You're a trooper.
And, oh, it was really interesting. Thanks, Dr. Joanne. I also like the case study because it gives it some humanity, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Humanizes it, and it's current.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's something, and we've all been watching, glued to the TV, and probably watching the Olympics, and so it's really interesting to see all these different, and each Olympics gets better coverage with TV, you know, with the slow motion and stuff, and so you can see you can see more of what's going on and appreciate it more, and with the interviews it's even better. So it's exciting. And I think the great thing about mental training is any of the case studies that we do, even with Don White, if we're not working with Don White, still the same principles apply of how to handle pressure. Yeah, how to handle choices of whether to do, you know, two events or one event. That happens all the time in, with skiing, you know, there's lots of different, there's alpine skiing, there's combined and Nordic, right? And Michelle, if you're working with athletes, they might decide to, do all the events or only one. Same thing with track.
Yeah, they'll do that, but they'll do it in advance.
Yeah, to make that decision.
Not at the 11th hour like he did it, which, you know, kind of sends up a lot of red flags. What's going on between his two ears?
What's going on between his ears? Yeah.
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 Because it was very last minute. And I know he was saying that he has the ankle injury, and, you know, I'm not sure how much that was a factor in it. But with alpine ski racing, most people have their forte's and their sports that they do, and they pretty much stick to it.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, when you make a decision to pull out of something at the last minute, I think everyone, especially if you're a big name like that, everyone's questioning what's going on, questioning your confidence, your ability, and the media are wanting to to talk to you. And then, of course, there's all the social media, which is an added factor, so much more so now than for the last Olympics, let's say, that everybody's tweeting about you and saying negative, possibly negative things or questioning. And so it's hard to stay away from all that. All that's going on. So there's a whole other culture out there dealing with all that stuff. And so I think sometimes it's easier to, you know, somebody like Michelle, or like Michelle you were saying with Farragan, being an underdog, it's really exciting to work with people like that, because they can focus on their sport and just not on all the, and just stay within as opposed to other people's expectations from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to just kind of emerge, kind of come out from under the, and do something, you know, just feel free to perform, and then anything you do is like, wow, this is great.
You've got the fun in there, right? I think when you add the pressure piece, people lose the fun and the joy of their sport.
Yeah, so it's have to keep that, find a way to keep that in there. So, great talking to you guys. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, this is fun. And so I'll send you more info this week about level two, and I look forward to working with you more. And then we'll have our next call. February the 27th, our next ongoing mentoring call here too. So at the same time. So thanks for staying up late, Michelle. And thanks
Dr. Joanne.
Dave, and I think other people had to go on to their next appointment. So this is great. So I'll have the replay up there shortly, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks, guys. Bye bye,
everyone. Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Take care.
Oh, Gio.
Bye. Have a great day.
Oh, thanks, Gio. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, take care, Doctor.
Oh, yeah. Did you have any other comments? I didn't know you were still on the call.
Yeah, still here. No, I think I really liked, I think it was Pam that mentioned it about working on the what ifs, the things that potentially could happen,
yeah,
rather than just things that you know are going to happen, which I like that. Sort of struck a nerve with me there. It's, you know, a good way to look at things. Prepare for everything, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And, they have a plan for getting through each one successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when there's something that's a shock in sport, it's really difficult to recover. I don't know if Dave's still on the call from the golfer, but when you play match play, if you expect your opponent not to make it, if he's off the green or something, and then all of a sudden he holds it, it's really difficult to then step up and repeat that yourself. So you've got to always assume that they're going to, you know, be prepared for that outcome so that you've prepared yourself to step up and do what you need to do. But
yeah, exactly, yeah. In tennis, you mean, or any sport?
No, match, well, I'm just, my example was match play golf. You know,
you can
be 4 foot from the hole, your opponent's off the green, and you think, right, well, he's not making birdie, and he chips it in, and all of a sudden you've got a 4 foot putt just for the half, you know, where you might have thought you'd won the hole already. So it's about being prepared for every situation.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Having that mental flexibility.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, guys, well, look, I don't want to,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure
you
keep leading to something else, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. Appreciate everything, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you, mate. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Okay.